Welcome to what is the Wednesday webcast from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. And today I'm really pleased. I was going to say I'm really pleased Scott's not here, but Scott's travelling. I'm not really pleased Scott's not here. I'm really pleased to have Fran Lusak, who is an adoptive parent. And you're black, clearly, if people can see. If you're on the podcast, Fran is black. So Fran, I'm going to dive straight in. And I met you a few months ago and we chatted a bit about this sort of stuff. So Fran, if you could introduce yourself and tell us kind of how you became an adopter, because I think you've got a very interesting story.
Oh, well, thank you, Al, for the opportunity. So yeah, I'm Fran, and as Al said, I'm black, female, single, and I decided that I wanted to get involved with fostering, actually, not actually adoption, because I've come from a background of working in events, and I found that on my day-to-day job, I gave so much love and care, and I realised it was going the wrong avenue. I was doing it for people who are making money, not me. So I really had a moment where I really evaluated what did I really enjoy in my skills, and I remembered working with children for a short start, working with families with children, kids under five. And that was really happy memories for me. So I decided that fostering was possibly the route that I wanted to go down. So with fostering, I was approved for three children between ages of 0 and 18. However, at the time, I wanted to work with young teenagers, so mums and dads that became pregnant from 12 to 16,
yeah,
to do the supported fostering. So I was really excited about that because I thought I can get to support families and help them to become independent parents. My first referral was for three children under the age of five.
Wow.
And I was a bit like, I think I could do this. And
wow.
My mum says, you can't do this. You can't do this.
That's
so
a big ask.
I said, it was a big ask. And it was really hard for me because I thought, I've gone through the whole approval process. I've got the capability to host three children. But in my mind, I was thinking three under five. The second request was for three under four, and at that point I was like, no, it's the first time, and if I did it, I'd probably end up in care. So I was really, really fortunate. I was blessed with a young child who at the time was 14 months. He's in the background,
right?
14 months, and it was my first experience of fostering, and it was challenging because I've been trained to be a little bit detached.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's the first time that you've got this little human being that's looking at you for guidance and a little bit scared, doesn't know what's going on. So it was more about having to make sure that I leaned on the support of the fostering network and family and friends and went through the journey of fostering.
Can I ask a question?
And it was...
Yeah. Thinking about... Because I work in fostering, that's my kind of day job. And we're often looking, when we're looking to put referrals or we're looking for children to fit into homes, regardless of how long that is, often we're looking for a match, you know, we would call it a good match. And was your colour, was that part of that process or what, that stage, or was it not sort of on the radar particularly?
That's really interesting because for fostering, it wasn't, it was more about how big my home was.
Right.
And through my assessment, what did they think would be the best placements for me? And because I was single and I had a home that could accommodate three children, that was more of the driver rather than race. So when I was approached, well, that's what I was led to believe, because
yeah,
obviously I'm not the person that does the matching. But yeah, no, I don't ever believe it came into it at that point.
Right. I mean, that's fair enough. I know that, I mean, again, it depends on what the needs of the children, doesn't it? And you would have thought it would have to be a factor. You would have thought. You would hope.
Yes and no, but I'm very mixed on that. But I'll tell you about that as I get later on,
yes,
into my life. So, so I had this little girl, absolutely amazing, and my role, as far as I was concerned, as a foster carer, was to do everything to support her needs and to support her mother to try and rehabilitate the relationship. So I went above and beyond, like, and I had a really good relationship with the mum. And it was quite sad because I was new to it, so very naive.
Yeah.
And I believed that, you know, a little bit of nurturing with the mum, because she's very vulnerable, that I believe she could have had the tools to continue to parent her child. But that was my naivety, because I'm obviously new to the process. Yeah. And I live in fairyland. And straight away, I was told by the social worker, this one's going to get adopted out. And that stuck in my head.
That's a phrase, isn't it?
And that was quite a... Yeah, and as somebody coming into it and very new and naive, I was a bit like, how can they tell? How do they know? They're not helping her. Let's, you know, let's keep on trying hard. And then they got to a point where they said to me, we've noticed she's got a really good attachment with you. Would you adopt her? Now, that's the first time adoption came on my radar.
And that's really unusual for them to ask foster carers, because foster carers are like gold dust, you know, there's never enough, is there? So that they must have really meant it.
Yeah, it's a child guardian that put it forward, and her social worker. My social worker was like, nah, you've got 3 bedrooms. We need your rooms for these kids. Don't be fooled, don't be sucked in. And it was such a difficult thing for me to do, because at the same time I got asked to adopt her, I was given a like once in a lifetime opportunity to go and work in Brazil. And it was something that, as much as I've come out of the events industry, I really, really, really was like, I've done with that world. I want to now be this potential adopted parent. And I solicited advice from family and friends, and everyone was really divided. People were like, oh, you can foster more kids, go to Brazil. And the others were like, no, you've done your games, events, experience.
Yeah.
This child, she's not going anywhere. And basically 2 people told me to do both.
Right.
And so I just, yeah.
Go for it.
So I decided to go ahead with the adoption and to accept the job in Brazil. So I took a 2-year-old with me. And due to the process, because I'd only been a foster carer for less than a year, they said, oh, it's going to be quite easy. You know, your Form F's still valid. So we just need to get somebody to reassess you based on the information.
Bit
provided.
Of tinkering, just cut and paste.
Yeah, cut and paste. Like, the answers are still fresh. And then they delayed it.
Right.
And they knew that I had this time critical job happening in Brazil. And for me, it got to a point where I had to decide, am I going to just stay and let the job go?
Yeah.
And I was at that point where I was going to stay and let the job go until they turned around to me and said, we've changed our mind. We don't want you to adopt her.
Did they give a reason for that?
Yeah. And this is a bit that blew me away. And I don't know if it's a common thing. I'm hoping it's not. But I was told, we've looked at the team managers reviewed the case, and even though there's a lot of positive points, we've decided that your heritage is different from your child's. You were born in the UK and you're Black British, but you've got a Caribbean and African parent, and your potential daughter was born in the UK and she's Black British, but she's only got African heritage. There's no Caribbean in there. Therefore, you're no longer a match.
I've got lots of questions. My head's really trying to get around that, because I think we mentioned in the previous episode that sometimes matching, when we're matching children in adoption, sometimes it comes just down to skin colour, you know, tone of colour, tone of skin. But then to be so specific in relation to, you know, family history, you must have been, how did you respond to that?
It makes me upset now thinking about it, because I literally, from day that I met my daughter, which is happy ever after because she's now my daughter,
let's calm everyone down.
My heart was like, keep it under a lid. Don't get attached, you know, give her the best care and love, but don't let her break that last barrier because you're not going to want to give her away. And it was so difficult because everybody she met, they fell in love with her and they were all like, oh, just keep her. Like it's an option. Yeah. You just keep her. So when I was approached by social services, I said, I'll only go ahead as long as there's nothing that's going to stop me apart from the judge saying, keep her with birth family.
Yeah.
So I said, and they said, no, guarantee it won't. So this absolutely came out of left field. I just didn't expect it. So I just felt like someone punched me in the stomach. I was physically sick.
I mean,
because the thought of losing her.
Yeah. I can really empathize that because I've got a similar sort of story myself, but that's shocking to get to that point and know that. But then that reason to be given seems, how do you make sense of that reason? You know, how did you approach that? Did you challenge that?
So lucky for me that I'm made a bit of stronger stuff. So after the initial shock, I sat down there and I said, there's no logic to that. Because first of all, this child's never left the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's come from a very challenging environment, so it's very conflicted in how she's been raised anyway. And they asked me. And I've taken this child, you know, because I like to go to Jamaica for Christmas with my mum. And I, as a foster child, I took her with me. So I was a bit like, I don't understand what needs is it that I'm now no longer meeting, whereas before it was good enough. So once I got my head around that, I went straight back to them and said, why?
Make sense of that.
Because at the time, they had a campaign, and I remember it was on the news, it was on buses, it was everywhere, saying you could be single, any ethnicity, you know, anything to adopt anybody. We just need you, get involved. And it's the same time the campaign was running, I was told that news. So I said, what's this about? And I challenged them. And I personally believe, I hope that it wasn't a case of it was down to race. I think it was more to do with the fact of resources, because I later found out that they found it would be easier for me to go and independently apply to adopt her because she would have been in my care for 1 year.
Yeah.
And all that took was to go to the court and have supporting reports from each social worker and pay a really small fee.
Yeah.
And that made me believe they were trying to either push me down that route to save resources, which to me was very disappointing because I would have preferred if they were transparent and said, you know what, it's easy for you to go down this path, and it would have saved a lot of heartache and a lot of disappointment and unnecessary emotional stress for everybody that was involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And often it's hard to make sense of that stuff at the time. But do you think that there's sort of maybe broadening out, because I know there is a happy ending, isn't it? You push through and now everything's as it should be. But thinking about race and kind of the understanding of the adoption world and even fostering, do you think that there's a lack of skill, there's a lack of knowledge? There's what, you know, because you said you don't think it was racism, but, you know, can you unpick that for me?
I think the challenge is, so based on my very little experience, because again, I went in as a foster carer, got one child, decided that that's my daughter.
Yeah.
And I would like to go back into fostering and adoption again. But for my small experience that I've had, I genuinely feel it was more about lack of resources to do a thorough matching and thorough assessment of what's actually the needs of this child. I think it felt like a real tick box exercise where they had a checklist and said, right, what's that child? What's a potential adopter? Check. Oh, that one looks a bit, it might not work out. Because I think it was more that case, because 7 years later, no one's come back to me to say, how are you coping with having a child who's got no Caribbean heritage? No one's offered any support to counteract that. So to me, I think it was more of a fear of the unknown,
yeah,
as in is there going to be potentially a risk to place this child where it's not 100% match? But me personally, people question where I'm from. I'm in a very eclectic mix, you know. I've got Gambian, Sierra Leonean, Jamaican, and born in Manchester, you know. Yeah. So you can't see somebody on the surface and say, oh, that's not a good match. Yet I've been through a full assessment and I've been assessed with the child to just turn around and just tick a box and say. So, yeah, actually, it's probably just racism or ignorance of a historical procedure where in the past they may come unstuck by going down a certain route. Mm-hmm. So they're a bit risk averse, just in case, let's not.
Yeah, because I mean, the experience of a, you know, black, you as a black British woman raising a black British girl, that seems to me to be the primary thing. That seems to be the you know, whether, because again, you know, Africa's a big country with an awful lot of countries, and then down to, you know, tribal, you know, my brother lives in Africa, so I'm, you know, I get it. So actually, how can we ever find a perfect match? So what are the basic skills? What are the skills that people need? And that, you know, that was a question that should have been asked.
Yeah, and I think as well, when we look at when children, they're looked at for good enough parenting, you know, we always say you need to have a good enough parent. And then as a foster carer, a doctor, you have to be a superhero, you know, above and beyond. And I agree with that because, you know, we don't want to give children out to substandard yeah. parents. At the same time, to nearly lose a placement based on something which I think is ridiculous and trivial, I think that's something that really needs to be reviewed. And to be fair, this happened 7 years ago, so things have changed. I'm not in the process, so I couldn't tell you how it's changed, but I'd love to believe it's changed right. and we've moved on. But I'm very, very passionate right now about using my negative experiences to make positive outcomes. So finding a way that using what we've been through as a family to not attack the system, but to support the system to do better for our kids.
And to shine a light on areas where we need to be better as social workers, hopefully. I mean, we were talking beforehand. We were looking at some of the statistics around adopters, about how we know how many adopters of colour there are, and we also know how many children of colour there are, and both wait longer. And do you, I mean, what insight or what's your views on that, your kind of thoughts on that?
My personal experience as a black female, okay, and this is my experience, yep. and I've had this from my Caribbean side and my African side. When you're a female, well, for my family, my journey was go to school. And as soon as you've got your qualifications, it's like, get married and have a baby.
Yeah.
And you're a bit confused. You're like, you told me to go to school and now you want me to sit down and get married and have a baby. And so in the black culture, generally, we love family, kids. You know, we're raised, it's not usually a 2.4, unless for social reasons, socioeconomic reasons. Usually you're very involved in your wider family.
Yes.
Okay. So it's very much a case of when are you having a baby, when are you having a baby. Now, within the community, generationally, like my parents all come from sibling groups, at least 8 or 10. Yeah. So there's this big thing of big families. Now, my generation's more 2 or 3.
Yeah.
So the grandparent, my mum's like, you need to have all these grandkids because you're not going to look after me. I need my grandkids to look after me. And I've been very much like, yeah, yeah, later, later, career. And for me, I've not found my life partner yet. But at the same time, being a mum and being able to be a mum through adoption was something that process in itself met those needs of the wider family. They got the grandchild, they became an uncle, they right. became a grandparent, they got all those things. And I think sometimes how you approach it, like the wider community will look in and go, ooh, is it because she's not got a man? But ooh, is it because right. she's got infertility? Ooh, why is she doing it? And it's very much a case of the listen, you know, the gossip around it. And I think that can put a lot of people off. Generally, from all races, yeah. people know in the business. Yeah. Now, every single person that's been blessed by my daughter is like, oh, we're considering doing it because we've seen it through, you know, seen first the journey. Hand. Yeah, so I think it's really a case of we've got to get rid of the stigma that adoption's only for people who can't have children and adoption's only for people who are in a stable relationship. And I'm not saying heterosexual relationships, I'm saying all relationships. Yeah. Single people adopt and it's fantastic, but it's hard, but it's amazing. Yeah. And I can't stress enough you know, when you get a really good job, like I've really been fortunate, I work in events, everyone goes, oh, once in a lifetime opportunity. And I kind of took it for granted that I had these amazing experiences, but nothing beats being a mum mm-hmm. to an adopted child. And I think, unfortunately, I can't say, oh, it's different from a birth child. All I can say is that adopting my daughter, even with all the challenges, it's still the most rewarding thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
So I really want to champion anybody who's considering it to find out more, get involved.
Yeah, I mean, that's when you look at the breakdown of, I mean, that's a broader system issue, isn't it? That when we look at the children of colour in the system, they're overrepresented, especially black children. Then we see that within the adoption community, people of colour and black people are underrepresented. So that could potentially be cultural and, you know, issues around faith and beliefs and all of that kind of stuff. But again, I find it really interesting that people are waiting longer. And I kind of, I mean, I don't want to kind of put words in your mouth and I don't want to kind of go, oh, well, that must be racism, you know.
Yeah.
But what do you think there are barriers in the system? I feel like I'm fishing. Trying to give you an answer.
No. Okay. So in regards to, is it accessible for black adopters?
Yeah.
I think what we need to do is right now, there's two issues. One is that a lot of black people are not aware that there's a massive need. And that if I talk to people, like, oh, really?
Right.
Because in their head, if there's a child in need, that child's usually scooped up into the family.
So yeah.
That child looks after by another family member. So if this child's in need, it's usually because of the breakdown in a family relationship and the families don't know that that child's now become part of the state system.
Yeah.
So people are not aware in the community that there's a need out there, because if they did, I think they'd be more proactive, because that's the family cultural way of, even if it's not like everyone that's older than me that's of colour, hello auntie, hello uncle.
Yeah.
Everyone's my auntie, everyone's my uncle, everyone will look after me, everyone will feed me, as far as I'm concerned. So that's not, I think we need to actually go out to the communities and let them know this is the reality, because then more people put the hand up. But not only this is the reality, this, if you want to do it, you can do it. Because people think, a lot of people are scared of the system. They're scared of, the system's there in place to protect children.
Yes.
And to protect us as adopted parents, yeah? So I will always say to people, the process is needed to make sure that the right people match with the right children and to protect both sides.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think more needs to be done to explain why it's a very intrusive process.
So is that a wariness of the system and systems and...
All systems, so, because you're going in not only to a system of social work, you're going into a system of character references, you're going into a system of
police checks, you know,
background checks,
yeah.
You're going into a system of, and it's stuff that people may have had challenges in the past, just for simple like character reference or job reference.
Yeah.
And when you say it, you, like for me, I work with security, but every time I go through the board, I'm like, have I brought something in? You still get that feeling. So imagine people who may have had a bad experience with any kind of government agency or lack of support, and then all of a sudden they're like, I want to help, but you're going to come and interrogate me and tell me I'm not good enough, or look at my home. You know, I think how we do it needs to be a bit more welcoming,
yeah,
and a bit more...
You know, I was thinking about the, you know, the whole Windrush issue, which is ongoing and has been going on for a long time. But if you're part of a community where that stuff is really, you're seeing people in your community taken away. You know, I work in North London. I work with families who, you know, who are part of that Windrush generation, or it's in, they're in the, then you don't want to be knocking on the door. You don't want to be raising your head above the parapet, do you? You don't want to kind of go, hey.
No.
Why would you do that?
And that's something that I think I know within my family, I've got a very large family, and our previous family business was the care industry. So we used to do social care, yeah, home care, hospitals. And we had a really big workforce, really dynamic workforce, a very collective workforce. And these people have come and supported the NHS, and the amount of abuse that they mm-hmm. used to get and stuff, I was like, nah, it's not real. You know, I didn't believe it. I was like, I've been here for so many years and I've never, but they were giving and they were getting that back. So there was genuine fear of systems and lack of support. And so a lot of people kind of come into the UK head down, just get on with it,
yeah,
and get out, and they don't integrate in a way because it's not been targeted at them. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think we've lost the sense of community, and we've lost that whole aspect where people can feel valued and bring something to the table. And this is things like social media, you know, oh, we're a glossy family, you know, that girl who adopted a little boy and then gave him back, you know, she got the likes at first then. So it's things like that. And everyone's a bit like, oh, you know, unless you've got money like Angelina Jolie or Madonna, you can't get a kid. Do you know what I mean? So again, there's a lot of work we need to do to rebrand what adoption actually is and be real about it. And if we're going to say, you know, we'll give you support, give support, make it be very transparent and let people know what value add they can bring.
Yeah, I mean, you've raised loads of really interesting issues that it seems that I've never really thought of that nervousness around systems. Again, you know, white man, what nervousness do I have? I'm blind to that. But then sort of as you're unpicking it, I'm starting to really think that actually, yeah, why would you kind of go and ring social services? Why would you do that when your experience of, you know, the Home Office, for example, you know, the work I do in the Home Office, it's brutal. You know, I maybe draw myself on the rocks of the government there, but so there's all of that stuff, and then added into culture, then it makes sense that families are just, we don't, you know, this isn't something on our radar, and even if it is on our radar, we're not necessarily wanting to put ourselves on the radar with it. So we're coming to the end here. I've got a minute or two left. Final thoughts, reflections, things that you wish I'd asked that I didn't ask and you wanted to say, go for it.
I think for me, as obviously right now there's a massive need. We're not just black adopters in general, okay? And I think we've got a long way to go because so many amazing children out there. But I think right now we need to make sure that black people know that they can adopt, they have value, and they will get support, and we need to get that message out. But in years' time, I don't want to keep on having these conversations. At the end of the day, this is another thing that we need to look at. Parents should be able to have children of all races, but we need to get away from that. So that's the thing. So for now, I'm advocate, I'll champion it, but we need to, the next webcast, we need to talk about the rainbows and butterflies experience where, you know, I want to be the Waltons. I want to have the night Jim Bob, night all of them. Like, I want to do it all. But for now, as I say, we are where we are. And it's a bigger thing with all the stuff that's going on in society right now. We need to know that it's all interlinked. And until we start to love and respect people, it's going to carry on.
I mean, in your closing statement, you've given me more questions, but I'm going to be really strong and disciplined and not kind of take you down that rabbit hole. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I am so glad we bumped into each other. We bumped into each other at a meeting a few months ago. And I would love to kind of hear more from you. And I'm looking forward to hearing more from you. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm just going to press stop live stream. Yeah, so we're no longer. How was that?
It's fine. I think I waffled on a bit, but
no,
I bring you back to you why you do it, and you know the passion, and you want our little kids to have these families because so many kids that could be having an amazing experience right now, but there's a little bit of bureaucracy that's preventing it from happening.
It's a pretty
and lack of accessibility.
Huge thing. I'm going to ask you one question. This will be for the podcast. You'd mentioned at the end, and I should have touched on it really, so it's my bad, this idea that within some communities, there's a kind of real concern that there's a, you know, you're taking our children and you're putting them in white families. And what brought this to mind was because I met an adoptive parent who was black and he had a white child. And I had all of these strange thoughts in my head going, oh, I've never, that's really unusual. It's really unique. And I thought, but that is what's happening to a lot of communities. So I'm waffling, sorry, it's bad. I'm asking badly. So do you have any concerns around white families taking black children or brown children or any?
Absolutely not. Because at the end of the day, if you go through the process of adoption, which you've both been through, and these people can provide a loving, nurturing home, yeah, it's down to the adoption community to support these families to meet any cultural needs. You know, we are in Britain. We're as much as people hate to say it, we're a diverse, eclectic bunch of nutters. and we need to celebrate the fact that that's what makes us the UK. You know, we are all a big melting pot. So I think we've got to be really careful because we're kind of keeping this really old thing of you can only match skin colours.
Right.
And you put in, on one hand, you're saying, but everyone needs to treat everybody the same. So why can't that person then look after that person? Do you see what I mean? It's getting diluted. And I think there needs to be more support in the education system to teach about black history and all yeah. kinds of cultural and historical things. So people are not fearful that they feel like they're missing out, you know, because I'll tell you the truth. I've learned more about black history now. I'm not going to say how old I am, but now since the events of recently with George Floyd and everybody yeah. like that, I've learned more now than I have in my whole career, the whole life. And some of that's because of my parents' coping mechanism of dealing with racism. They've raised me to say, there's no racism. Work hard, keep going forward, keep going forward. Yeah. So when things were happening to me, I was a bit like, they're just haters or, you know, I feel sorry for them. I never saw it as racism. It's only now when I can look back and being quite triggered that I've gone, actually, that was racism.
Yeah.
Am I happy that I missed out on all that history? Do I feel a bit duped? Now, that triggered me as well. And at the same time, I spoke to my parents and said, why did you make the choice to not tell me they weren't, because we wanted to protect you? So I think it's a balance. You know, you need to know about where you come from, but you also need to know about going forward.
Where you're going.
You can't stick in the past. We need to go where you're going. Do you know what I mean? And it's like my daughter, I celebrate her identity all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that we always celebrate. And anytime she's at that age where it's confidence and my friends say this and, you know, I've got afro hair and they've got silky hair. And I'm like, yeah, but can their hair do this? Like, and just celebrate her. But put it down to just a normal age-related challenge rather than a race-related challenge. You see what I mean? Because I think sometimes we focus too much on, oh, it's got to be about race. And it's not. It's just about girls being mean girls in the playground and the jealousy. See what I mean? So that gets a bit blurred as well.
But I think that's one of the things as a, you know, as a parent of mixed girls, that's for me, there's always that question mark in my mind, is this racism, is it not? What does racism look like? And I need, because I have no experience of racism, to reflect on or to compare to. So that's the one thing that's missing for me. I can't do that. You can go, that's just a girl being mean, you need to ignore her, or you can then go, oh, hang on, that was, we need to address it. That's where I need help, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's quite, once you actually have one experience that's been identified, that's racism, you'll quite easily work it out. It's really, because even for me, I was just like, oh, yeah. And like little things, I had a conversation with my friend from uni and it was on the Black Lives Matter thing and she was adamant. Absolutely adamant. She was like, and she's an ethnic minority herself, and she's adamant. She's like, all lives matter. And I said, I'm a foster carer, parent, My best friend's blonde with blue eyes. I work in the community. I feed the homeless. Of course, all lives matter. I said, but right now, it's very apparent that some people don't believe in equality of black lives. Yeah. That's what it's about. I said, it's not about any kind of group. It's not about anything. It's just the fact. And she was adamant. And then when I broke it down, she actually is not bothered about all lives. Because she was saying, you know, because why should I pay more tax? I'm fortunate to be in the tax bracket. And my money has to go to these vulnerable. She said vulnerable, which to me was like, oh, she cares. Then it was like vulnerable crackheads that decide to do this. And I said, you know what? I said, I'm one paycheck away from being that vulnerable crackhead. I'm one bad decision away from that. So you're telling me that you who knows me wouldn't have any empathy for me if I had a breakdown and that happened. And she was so focused about me, but she was so adamant it was about that. And she missed the whole dynamic about the fact it's looking after the everybody and loving everybody. So I think, again, people get really either bored of stuff. So like, oh, they're still harping on about race.
Yeah.
But it's like, actually, you telling me you're bored of it is telling me that you don't care about how I feel.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or, and me saying as well about, it's not my job to teach you about racism, but it's my job to let you know my experiences so then you can be like, that makes sense. That, now I get it. That makes sense. So in regards to like, with you and your daughters, it's a case of, it's like, how did it make you, like what happened? How did it make you feel? It's those probing things. Because you have to go, the way I do it is I don't always automatically think racism. I also think what happened. Because in most cases, my daughter, she's probably started it. So I have to understand what's the real story.
Start at the beginning.
Dissect it. And in those small times when it has been, because my daughter's got an Islamic name.
Right.
And her friends are Asian and they're Muslims. And they pulled her up on that, saying, you're black, you shouldn't have that name. So I then give my daughter tools to say, go back and tell them, do you know that in Gambia, where we're from, 90% of Gambians are actually Muslim and 10% are Christians and they live harmoniously, just like you girls do. So it's those sort of things that you have to find a nice way of educating them.
Not just getting into a scuffle.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really interesting to hear. Because I think it is really helpful. I think, you know, us parents of children who are not, don't reflect our own ethnicity, we need to be really switched on, and we need to open our ears to people like yourself and other people who've experienced it. Right, I'm going to wrap up now because I have other podcasts to podcast, as you do. Thank you so much for chatting to me, and I'm going to stop recording now.
Okay, cool. Bye.
Bye.